Hey, this is Pablo Torre. Before we start, I just want to let you know, today's episode on gymnastics contains discussion of sexual abuse. Thank you for listening.
I think Marta saw I had something special in me before I knew it myself. So she was always very hard on me. Like sometimes to the point where I not thought it was unfair, but she definitely expected a lot more from me than others at times. I remember I didn't stick my 2.5 on vault, and she told me I was useless for the team.
That is gymnastics superstar Simone Biles talking about longtime USA Gymnastics coach Marta Caroli. It's from ESPN's new 30 for 30 podcast series, Heavy Metals, which explores how Marta and her husband Bella came to dominate American gymnastics. From the moment Simone Biles arrived at their infamous training center, it was clear she was unlike any gymnast the Carolis had coached before, both on and off the mat. Today, the Heavy Metals podcast reporter, Alyssa Roenick, tells the story of how Simone Biles succeeded and suffered under Marta Caroli and the new course Biles set in elite gymnastics. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Tuesday, July 21st. This is ESPN Daily. You did something big. You just birthed a new season of 30 for 30 podcasts into the world. So I guess first off, how does all that feel?
It's funny you use that term because I keep joking with my friends and family that I'm going to ask for like podcast maternity leave.
Alyssa Roenick is a senior writer for ESPN. She just released the 7-part 30 for 30 podcast series titled Heavy Metals Inside the Caroli Gymnastics Empire.
Yeah, it's a nice feeling for Bonnie and me and everyone we worked with at 30 for 30 to know that it's out and people are listening to it.
So if you had to sum it up in a sentence or two, what the project's about, how do you do that?
Well, you know, the easy sentence is that it's about the 40-year history of Bella and Marta Caroli and US and their impact and influence on USA Gymnastics.
Caroli and his wife Marta are the anchors of the powerhouse U.S. gymnastics team. They oversee this, the U.S. Olympic Training Center, on their ranch in Texas.
But it is also about power, control, systematic dysfunction at the Olympic sport level. And it is about a group of athletes finding their voices, using their voices, and speaking out in the hopes of changing the culture of their own sport.
So I want to talk to you today about how that larger story, how it intersects with the biggest name in gymnastics right now. And that's got to be, I mean, you could say it with me.
Simone Biles.
Simone Biles, who was second on the...
Simone Biles, two-time world all-around champion.
A gold medal once again for Simone Biles.
You say that whenever you do interviews about anything surrounding the sport, no matter what aspect of it, her name always comes up.
You know, I would argue she's one of the biggest athletes in sports, not just in gymnastics, and one of the most powerful voices in sport.
The hardest vault in the world, and boy, she does it spectacularly.
Oh my!
Wow!
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 Some of the very first interviews I did, when you would, you know, you come back, you transcribe them, sit with them, and started realizing, you know, I haven't asked a single person anything about Simone. And I have so much tape on Simone Biles. And it wasn't because we were having conversations about who's the most talented gymnast in the country right now, but it was because we were getting into conversations about the culture of the sport, the changing culture of the sport. Is it possible to win a different way? Is it possible to coach a gymnast in a healthy, positive manner and for them to be great? Is it possible for a gymnast to live an even remotely, quote unquote, normal life and still make it to that elite level? Is it possible for the culture of silence that has completely dominated this sport to change? And her name would be brought up every time as an answer. And that answer was yes, because look at Simone Biles. And, you know, we started realizing there was this sort of other story that was emerging that, you know, Simone Biles, the greatest gymnast in the world, arguably the greatest gymnast of all time, is actually this living, breathing, still competing example of a better way to do it.
With all those quotes you kind of accidentally collected, I guess, on Simone, while reporting on the Carolis, you and Bonnie Ford wrote this piece with the headline, How Simone Biles Found Her Voice and Changed Gymnastics Culture. So to understand how Simone changed it, we kind of have to understand what the culture has been as created and controlled by the Carolis. So can you remind us what cemented the Carolis' place as these domineering leaders of U.S. gymnasts?
Gold medals, winning.
Without question, they have just won another world title.
That makes four straight, won by the United States.
Bella back in the day was the face of the duo.
Because I strongly feel, for a coach, first of all, you have to be a teacher. You have to be formed as a teacher. You have to have a good knowledge about the methods and to use the skills you've been learning.
He loves attention. If Bella Crowley lives for anything and is motivated by anything, it's attention and fame.
I'm the champion!
Bella Crowley, hear him?
Marta was always the quiet one, but you know, we've come to understand she was motivated by control and power.
The mind of the gymnast, it's very clear. When they come here, they come for one single reason, to focus on their training.
Around 2008, I would say, was sort of peak both of those. Bella is really not part of the, you know, overseeing the actual team, but he's in Beijing at the Olympics. He is the face of NBC. He is anyone who wants an interview that you're being pointed to Bella Crowley. He's still the face of the sport, even though he's not coaching anyone and really has no say over the program.
We are so far away, the best in the world, that is even frightening to be. We are too good.
And Marta has the all-around gold medalist in Nastia Lukin, the all-around silver medalist in Shawn Johnson. Carly Patterson had won the gold medal in 2004.
You must strive for perfection, and you never can be thinking that I climbed to the top of the mountain and I cannot fall off it.
And once she, you know, started overseeing these programs that were winning in a way that the United States hadn't been in consistently, she had unchecked power.
We're not looking at the names. We're really looking at what they can do now. How strong of a person it is, how disciplined a person it is.
You know, when you think about the culture of silence and the culture of training on injuries, not speaking up, not telling someone you were injured or hungry or tired, all that played into the fact that if you spoke up about those things, Marta had a conveyor belt of incredible gymnasts waiting to take your place. And so that bred athletes who competed hurt. And when I say hurt, I'm talking about competed on broken bones. Mm. It bred eating disorders. And it also bred a silence of, you know, never speaking up about anything that you felt was wrong in the fear that you would be replaced. And so that's the culture. And right around that time is when Simone Biles, you know, came into the program as a young gymnast. And that's the world she was walking into.
I mean, that's a world that makes the NFL look like daycare based on that description. What was Simone's relationship to these people? When did she first enter into the Caroli orbit?
So we have a story in the oral history that her first coach, Amy Borman, tells that, you know, Simone started gymnastics a little, you know, quote unquote, late. Amy started coaching her when she was 8 and saw some just incredible potential and skill and power. And so when she was 13, she was invited to some developmental camps at the ranch. And, you know, Simone is a really sensitive, bubbly. I mean, if you've seen a single interview with her, you know, I don't think it's possible for her to do an interview without giggling. She likes to, you know, have fun and you know, communicate with the athletes around her. And that was the kind of gym she came from. And then she goes to the ranch and, you know, that's not okay. Talking, quote unquote, goofing off. And Marta, as Amy says, just railed her.
I was like, oh, I'm being invited to a summer camp. That's going to be so fun. I get to stay in a cabin, get to be with the girls. No, we went there and it was like a boot camp. That's what they should have called it because it was not fun. They should take the word camp out of it. And I did not enjoy it. She said I was sloppy and if I didn't get it under control, like the power, it would be a waste of talent. Yeah, Marta didn't like me back then.
What Marta said to these kids meant the world to them, and so it really beat her down.
It's hard being that young and having someone tell you that you're not good enough when you feel like you're trying your hardest. I was not about that. That was not fun.
And so Amy made a choice, along with sitting down with Simone's parents, to not accept the next invitation to the ranch. She really thought, like, this could break this kid. So she continued training outside of the program in her, you know, positive gym with her incredible support system around her. And she just started winning. She won 2 all-around titles. She took 3rd in the all-around at nationals, and she qualified onto the national team. The ranch was the national team training center. She could have turned that down, but of course that's the goal, right, is to be part of that national team. And so that meant going back to the ranch. And then once you make the senior national team, that's going back to the ranch once a month, upwards of 10 times a year. And I think one of the things that was really helpful for Simone is that she, her coach, her parents, their entire worth was not based around making the Olympic team and making this woman happy. We sat with Simone's mom as well, and she said, you know, I knew all the rules. I constantly broke them. Rules like, you know, parents weren't allowed to stay at the same hotel. Parents weren't allowed at the ranch. Parents weren't supposed to talk to Marta. Marta wasn't supposed to talk to parents. You know, and she's like, I constantly broke them. Simone, when she was at the ranch, I think in some respects she had to conform to that culture, you know, at some times. You know, if Marta said no talking in the gym, no giggling in the gym, she had the good fortune of having everyone around her stop in those moments and figure out what was best for her.
So Simone engaged with the Carolis, and she did it on her own terms, but we know now that she was not immune to their power, nor to the sexual abuse that happened at the ranch under Dr. Larry Nassar. Alyssa, after the break, let's talk more about Simone Biles' response to the criminal case against Dr. Nassar and her impact on the culture of elite gymnastics since then.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Alyssa, I'm going to take us to 2016. That's when USA Gymnastics team doctor Larry Nassar was arrested on charges of sexual abuse, and that eventually led to a sentencing hearing where hundreds of athletes spoke out against him. The accounts of abuse spanned decades, and Nassar is now in prison for those offenses. But many of those crimes happened at the Carolis ranch, and in many people's minds, Bella and Marta Caroli have not been held fully accountable. So for those who aren't familiar, can you explain the work relationship between the Carolis and Larry Nassar?
When Larry Nassar first started working for USA Gymnastics, they were personal coaches. So he became the national team medical coordinator in 1996, right around the Atlanta Olympics. If everyone remembers the Magnificent Seven and Carrie Strug and Dominique Moceanu and that team. And so in 2001, Marta Caroli became the national team coordinator, and she oversaw the program for the next 15 years. And throughout that time, Larry continued to be the national team medical coordinator for the women's program. which meant he was at international meets, he was at big meets, he was at the training camps at the ranch. And so Larry continued to volunteer with the program until 2015, when he posted on Facebook that he was retiring.
And we know now that Nasser's retirement was something USA Gymnastics encouraged, actually, as they'd become aware of allegations against him. Meanwhile, Simone Biles was off training for the Rio Olympics. She was already the face of U.S. gymnastics, this total star, and she didn't know about anything hidden behind Nasser's retirement. So at that point, Biles had 16 medals from World Championship meets, 11 of them gold. What was the dynamic between Simone and Marta Karoly in the years leading up to the 2016 Olympics?
You know, her relationship with Marta was one of necessity. Marta was the boss. She was the national team coordinator. And Simone was a gymnast on her team. Now, Amy said something to us, Amy Borman, who was her coach from age 8 until the 2016 Olympics, that she felt like Marta had this ability. Marta didn't say much. She just, you know, the Marta stare. Everyone knows the Marta stare. But she had this ability just by her presence and her demanding of perfection to get that last one half of 1% out of the gymnast that sometimes Amy felt like she couldn't get. You know, I mean, look, before Simone Biles, the conversation was, could a gymnast ever hold a world title and an Olympic title at the same time? It's only been done once, a very long time ago. You know, competing in two Olympics, winning back-to-back gold medals, everything she's doing seemed impossible. And she has defied all of that.
This might be her very last World Championships, and if it is, we have just had the true honor of watching her make history.
It is a gold medal once again for Simone Biles. That is medal number 24. Nobody has ever had 24 medals at the World Championships.
Could she have done all of that with a different national team coordinator? I think the answer to that is yes. But I think that she wouldn't deny that Marta Karoly had some influence over her career.
Marta retires in 2016, right after the Rio Olympics. What were things like between the two of them when she stepped away?
Oh, nothing. I mean, gymnasts from the beginning of the Karoly's career till now, when they are done with you, they are done with you. I mean, there was no goodbye. They got on a plane and flew home before the Olympics were over. I mean, that was very typical. And so, you know, the gymnasts on that 2016 team, there has been no conversation.
A month after Simone and the U.S. won gold at the 2016 Olympics, the Indianapolis Star puts out their first report of Larry Nasser's abuse. And many more reports and testimony followed. But as of today, more than 500 women and girls have said they were abused by Nasser. So how did Simone initially react to the news?
Publicly, she didn't. She was silent. In speaking with those around her, like many of the gymnasts, when their coaches, parents asked, you know, she sort of shut down and didn't want to talk about it and said no. You know, Amy told us that, you know, she kept saying no, that wasn't me, that didn't happen to me. And Amy said one day when she asked Simone, are you sure? And she texted back, no, I'm not sure. And then they spoke and had a really emotional conversation. And then in early 2018, she knew, you know, that some of her friends and peers would be giving impact statements. And Maggie Nichols, who is one of her best friends, released her impact statement that her mother would read.
He didn't have gloves on. He didn't tell me what he was doing. And there was no one else in the room. And I accepted what he was doing because I was told by the adults in charge that I should receive help from him.
When Simone read that statement and realized that not only had her best friend been abused by him, but she's recognized sort of herself in her words, she crafted, you know, a very emotional message as well and posted it on Twitter. And that was the first time that she revealed that she had been sexually abused by Larry Nassar.
I felt that if I sent that out, I would be helping others speak up and speak out. So I just hit send as I was walking into the gym, put my phone down, and started practice.
And in that tweet, she also said, I can't imagine having to return to the place where I was abused, meaning she would have to go back to the ranch where she had been abused by Larry just to be part of the national team. I mean, at this point, it was very clear that a lot of the abuse had taken place at the ranch, yet it was still the national team training center. And 3 days later, USA Gymnastics cut ties with the Carollis and closed the ranch.
Deciding to speak out, I didn't do that for myself. I thought by showing courage, I could help others. I feel like sometimes, like, people don't realize how triggering it is for me, but I put my mentality at jeopardy to help other people.
When Simone did that, when she sent that tweet talking about how it breaks her heart to even think about having to return there, did she know that it would result in the shutting down of the ranch?
Not at all. I do not think it even crossed her mind. You know, to be an athlete in a world like that, where, you know, your opinion and voice is so subverted, you know, even someone like Simone, I do not think, like, understood the power of her voice and understood the power of who she was in the sport. And we had a lot of gymnasts tell us, seeing that from Simone, seeing the reaction made us realize we do have a voice. We do matter. We are not just a conveyor belt of numbers coming through this program who can be replaced any moment. And so Jordan Weber was one of the gymnasts who told us that she's a 2012 gold medalist. And seeing Simone's tweet empowered her.
That kind of showed me, okay, like, as Olympians, we have a voice. We have power in this.
She had been a Jane Doe. She wrote an impact statement and flew home to Michigan and gave an impact statement within 24 hours of reading Simone's tweet.
I thought, okay, if I can give this statement and use my voice to try to make things better for the next group of athletes, I almost felt obligated or a responsibility to do that.
More than 100 women stepped forward and gave public impact statements. And it was a snowball effect. Some of these really well-known Olympians show up in Michigan to give impact statements, and gymnasts and survivors all over the country are watching TV, as we all were, and going, oh, if she can do it, I can do it. If she can do it, I can do it.
It's become pretty clear that Simone is more than just arguably the greatest gymnast in the world, maybe the greatest female athlete who exists right now. She's also this inspiration and also this megaphone. And so how has Simone found her power in social media since all of that?
You know, she's very thoughtful about the way that she approaches anything she posts. She knows how many people see it. The very first person who really sticks out in my mind was Missy Marlowe. She was on the 1988 Olympic team, the first Olympic team that Bella Caroli was the head coach of. And she said to me, Simone Biles,
she was the first one that dared put a picture of food on Instagram. And she's the first one to show herself out in a social situation, because everyone knows that if you're not at the gym, you're supposed to be resting. She was the first one to, you know, have a boyfriend in public. I mean, she's broken all the rules by, you know, by being even a slightly normal person that way.
I mean, Missy was like, we had a text chain with friends just saying, wow, the world is changing and she's doing it. So then when she started using her voice to call out injustice, you know, call out social injustice as she is today, people trust her. They believe her. They know that she's incredibly authentic. Steadily, we have seen her be more outspoken. You know, there's the famous birthday tweet of earlier this year. USA Gymnastics tweeted out, it was either a photo or a video of Simone doing something incredible, and they just said she was calling it her Jordan birthday, happy 23rd Jordan birthday. Simone Biles, we just know that you will continue to amaze us with your incredible talent. And she retweeted it and said, how about you all amaze me and order for an independent investigation? Wow. Simone will clap back. She's been very open about the role that therapy has had in her life, the positive role that therapy has had in her life. Outside of those closed door sessions, she's really limited talking about this. So limiting the amount of time she spends giving him, you know, thought and breath outside of those, you know, closed door sessions with a real purpose. And then, you know, using her voice to hold the people around him accountable.
It's really hard to talk about. I just feel like, I don't know, I don't mean to cry, but it just, it's hard coming here for an organization and having had them fail us so many times. And we had one goal. We've done everything that they asked us for, even when we didn't want to, and they couldn't do one damn job. You had one job. You literally had one job, and you couldn't protect us. It's just hard, and we try to work through it, but it'll take some time. I'm strong. I'll get through it, but it's hard.
Now, in some parallel universe somewhere, one that is way better than the one we occupy, one that doesn't have coronavirus and doesn't have any of the laundry list of other things that cause us both to be terrified on a regular basis. In that universe, Simone is in Tokyo, and she is getting ready to compete in her second Olympics. And all of that would have started this coming weekend. Obviously, those games have been postponed in our reality. So what is Simone doing right now?
She is still training, and certainly with the focus and hope that there will be an Olympics next summer. USA Gymnastics actually just released the updated dates for next year's Olympic trials. And of course, she teases out little videos of her awesomeness here and there. She's 100% focused on an Olympics. Of course, all of that can change, but for now, that's where her focus is.
Thank you for joining us, Alyssa.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much. Congratulations on the new job. This is very cool.
I appreciate it. You can hear Alyssa Roenick and Bonnie Ford's full investigation into Marta and Bella Caroli by downloading all 7 episodes of Heavy Metals, Inside the Caroli Gymnastics Empire. The entire series is available now in the 30 for 30 podcasts feed. Thanks to Alyssa and the 30 for 30 team for providing us audio from that series. Coming up, a complete left turn into the secret world of gorillas, bulls, raccoons, and dragons, and what exactly it means to be essential in the NBA bubble.
Delicious, meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Here's another story I want you to know. If you're like me, you've spent hours contemplating how abnormal sports will be when actual games return. But only today did you finally spare a thought for mascots. Josh Planos at 538 reports that hockey, baseball, and football pay mascots around $30,000 to $50,000 a year, making it brutal, anonymous work. Unless you're in the NBA, where about a third of mascots earn six figures annually. In fact, people love NBA mascots so much that they perform at not just holiday parties and weddings and fundraisers, but at funerals. Several say they've even been asked to serve as pallbearers. And the king of all mascots is not my personal favorite, the Phoenix Suns gorilla, but Chicago's 50-year-old Benny the Bull, whose TikTok account is apparently the second most followed pro sports account in the entire world, with 2.5 million people subscribing to videos that all kind of feel like tiny acid trips. And yet, when the games themselves come back, these allegedly non-essential mascots won't, which is a shame, because I also lean on sports for normalcy. And my normal just happens to be a guy breakdancing in a gorilla suit and then dunking a basketball after jumping off a trampoline. I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.